everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the spooky head. I panicked.
It's fine. Two-Headed Game Master, you do one every episode.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
was gonna,
so many.
I was going to say I'm the going to mispronounce the third word as a head. But then I was like, don't put that evil on yourself. I'm going to do it now.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. What are we talking about this time?
Today, we are going to discuss horror mechanics versus vibes. We've played a couple horror games. We like to do spooky one-shot horrors. So we're going to discuss the efficacy of achieving horror or, you know, just other distinct genre vibes through either mechanics or just vibes and atmosphere or using them both.
Mainly horror, because that's just, you know, what we've been on and what we're talking about. But the idea of like, well, can you achieve how do you achieve atmosphere, tone, genre? How do you do that? Well, you know, there's different ways. So, horror games or sessions that have a horror bend to them.
Mm-hmm.
If you've listened to the show for any significant amount of time, you know, one, we do a Halloween spooktacular every year. It's our kind of like one constant in the shifting world of madness and pain. We really like that. That's fun for us. We like the genre of horror in general, because there is a lot of, you know, every new horror thing stands on this mountain of tropes and ideas, and either, like, you know, chooses what to engage with or what to subvert. And it's just, it's a fun genre that we all like a lot. And there's a lot of fun stuff to do with it. And as we've mentioned before on this show, we really like doing one-shots. And horror is a great forum for
one-shots.
A one-shot RPG adventure.
So we're going to talk about horror games in session in general, which is kind of what we were just doing. But we're also going to talk about how to achieve horror.
Did I blow past our outline?
We did not signpost before you got into the first thing.
I thought you did.
No, I was just joking about how hard efficacy is to say. So
we'll get back to what I was saying.
Yes. So right after we finish what we're talking about, we're going to talk about achieving horror with vibes and atmosphere. And then we're going to talk about using mechanics to achieve a horror, or to perpetuate the horror tropes. And then we're just going to have a conversation about what we think.
Yeah, because we don't know what we think yet. This has been an idea floating around.
So back to just horror games and sessions in general, right? As Cosmo said, we like one-shots. We also think one-shots are great. Time to use horror because it's a lot easier to capture horror in a 3-hour session than it is for, you know, several 3-hour sessions spread over months.
You can't be tense in horror, you know, you can't be tense and spooky and have that remain effective for an 18-month you know, role-playing campaign.
Like, oh, the last time we played was 3 weeks ago, and like, I kind of forgot where we're at, and then like, you know, coming back into that probably takes most of the session, and then you get like 30 minutes of that, and then it's time to go.
Yeah. There's so many things that would break it up. So, we don't really do very much horror stuff in our ongoing campaigns, but when we do one-shots, and we do one-shots pretty frequently because, one, we like doing them. A one-shot of just whatever, pull something together. It's great when, you know, the whole group can't meet, but the couple of people who are still there would still like to play something.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to fucking play Catan.
Boo.
Yeah. I'm not, like, really a board game hater, but I do hate Catan.
You're just a known hater. Yeah. You know, a general hater.
I've copped to that.
So, it's not Catan.
You know what? And also, Catan didn't even come for us. It wasn't coming up. I just took a shot at Catan for no reason. I don't like it. That's not what we're talking about.
No, sir.
You can, it's also great for, new players. You know, if you've played in a group for any amount of time, you've probably had this happen. Like, hey, my friend is curious about this. Can we bring it? I'm like, yes, but we're not going to fucking play our regular thing then, because it's just not going to work. So do a one shot. And yeah, so one of the coolest sorts of one shots, aside from just like a classic dungeon crawl, is do some horror. Do a horror movie, but as a role-playing thing. Do some horror tropes. And if you've been keeping up with the show, we just talked a bunch about Mothership. We've been playing Mothership. Mm-hmm. There's some Mothership actual play bonus episodes out there to listen to.
I know it's been like a year, but we also did a live stream of The Quarry.
Quarry. One of the first long-form actual play things that we did was when Enzo, sometimes guest of the show, ran his spooky western.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, was like Mothership. It was broken up into several episodes, but we sat down for one long scare sesh and got into it. So, basically, all this is to establish our ethos. We like the horror genre. We think it works really well for pen and paper games if you're confining it to a one-shot. We've done a lot of them. And we like to do them, and we're going to continue to do them. And like anything we continue to do, we're thinking about how to have the best version of that experience.
Yeah. Most of our experience, especially, and most of our experience, I mean the Halloween spooktaculars, are vibes-based. What does that mean, Dane? Well, it means there aren't actual mechanics that help facilitate the horror. It's all just describing things spookily, giving tension, using all the tools of narration to create a horror vibe.
It's not a point on our outline here, but I'd like to interject with a little bit of, what that kind of looks like and how that works well. One, it kind of starts with describing something normal. I think our most successful spookies have been, the gas station one that you did, the summer camp one with Brian. Those were both with Brian, actually.
Well, Brian,
we like to scare Brian.
Brian is good. There are a lot. Mm-hmm. We use Brian a lot because he really reciprocates the atmosphere of horror that we throw at him.
So what you do is you set the scene, you describe something kind of normal and almost mundane, or you establish what is normal in this space, and then you start to change it. Weird stuff starts to happen. I would say, and these are just some lessons we could put on the board, it's not really meant to be a tips and tricks, but I think the more fantastical of a situation you establish, because I would say that my two spooktaculars, my most recent one was a space one, and I don't feel like the spooky hit quite as hard. And then prior to that was like an X-File, where y'all were scientists on a remote island, and there was already enough weirdness where I feel like the scary, we had to build up to the scary and spend longer establishing that, this is what's normal here, because it wasn't just like, hey, you're working at a convenience store, which is very, maybe not everyone's worked at a convenience store, but everyone has been to a convenience store at night. So the situation is really easy to imagine. And then when scary stuff starts to happen, we don't have to do a lot of mental legwork to get there.
Finish your thought, because I have something to say about that. So on the board, the more fantastical a situation, the harder it is
to then make it scary, I think.
our very first named Halloween special. It was, if you remember, I ran, because we had just done the how to do a predator.
Yeah.
So I had tried, I did that,
mm-hmm.
With the intent, you know, being it was going to be for Halloween release. It was supposed to be a little scary, a little spooky. And I'd like crafted this own little world. It was like a space fantasy, like a Star Wars kind of, you know. So in space, doesn't make it sci-fi. It was a fantasy.
Mm.
And I don't think the horror just didn't come through because it was so new. Like you and Nico had to learn the rules of the world,
mm-hmm.
right, before like the horror could come through, and you spent the whole time learning the rules of the world because it was a new thing. It wasn't work at a convenience store,
right?
It was, hey, you're on an alien planet and everybody has magic, and like, you know,
which isn't to say that you can't do horror from a, you know, from a springboard of something slightly fantastical. I think the Witcher games work really well to, you know, deliver some horror because the fantasy world that you're going through is so based in just like, you know, medieval and Renaissance history and
familiar
and familiar, just like classic fantasy stuff. And then you go out into the woods and the woods start to get scary. You're like, all right, I knew what was going on back there. I've seen, you know, like blacksmiths and peasant farmers and mm-hmm. a tavern. Okay. But the scary thing is out in the woods, or like the mothership stuff that we've just been going through.
Yeah.
It's just gritty, like space trucker stuff. And the corporations are mean and everyone's life is hard. And so you don't have a choice when they send you down to this planet and then suddenly some
mm-hmm.
cosmic horror is unraveling your fucking mind.
Yeah. And Mothership, I think, is a good example of that, but it also has a lot of mechanics that help, which we'll talk about
yeah,
in a second.
We will get to that.
So when you're doing a vibe-based thing, the more abnormal the like little situation is, and the more normal the general like situation starts as, mm-hmm. I think I said that extremely backwards. The more normal the situation starts as, and then the weirder it gets, is helps create that atmosphere.
That's where you
horror.
Get effective spookiness. Mm-hmm. But if you start from somewhere fantastical, then you need to do some real quick legwork, and that foundation needs to be solid before yeah. you then try and make it scary.
Exactly.
So
doing a vibes-based atmosphere horror
yeah.
takes some player buy-in, right? The yeah. players have to reciprocate
what
the,
you put out the spooky, and they have to put it out back. They have to put out that, like, yeah, my character is in this normal situation, and so when the lights go out and you see a little shadow go past the window,
mm-hmm.
you have to treat that like that is as abnormal of a thing as it is. You know, if that happened to the Master Chief, you just like, all right, I'm going outside with my big gun.
Yeah.
That's not what's...
Mm-hmm. So, like, there's no rules that say you can't go out there with your big gun. It's more of a, like, prompt to be like, how scary is that? Because it's not normal, and like, you know, imagine, you know, if you were just a regular convenience store worker
mm-hmm.
and this happens.
Well, then the first thing you do is like go for the phone or something. Mm-hmm. You do normal person things. You go for the phone and like, oh, okay, 911, what's your emergency? And then the phone line gets cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game master, now you're both playing. You are playing off of each other to compound this spooky vibe.
Mm-hmm. So we think, we have it written down here on our outline that to focus on that atmosphere and have that back and forth between the player and game master, you want minimal mechanics, right? So like, mm-hmm. yeah, oh, the lights go out and a spooky shadow goes across the window really fast. what do? You reach for the phone. You don't need to, like, roll up a phone.
The last thing you want to be doing in that situation is, like, moving your character on a board. Like, do I have enough speed
to get to the phone?
To get behind the counter and do the phone. Like, that mechanics at that point are getting in the way of the immersion.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanics don't always get in the way of the immersion, but that type of mechanic in that situation is a speed bump, not a, you know, not a boost.
Yeah, and so it can be, right, this is where it requires that player buy-in. With a minimal mechanic system, let the characters act and, you know, give them good, you know, believe they're going to act in good faith. So, like, I don't know, an example, the Camp Wolf Skull horror thing. It's like, I let you guys have real freedom with, like, what you could do and what you could use, but, like, something bad's going to happen, right? Like, if you try to run away, right, which is a great normal reaction, you know, great buy-in.
I don't want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to roll to run away. You run away, and then, like, the monster tries to grab you. Now roll to avoid the grab.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you're like, oh, fuck. I really hope I can avoid that grab because I don't want to get grabbed.
Mm-hmm.
And not, like, worrying about how much movement you have or how fast the monster is or the monster's AC.
Yeah. The... Just generally what we've done is used our RPG Lite system, which is a super... super minimal. You just, like, roll a d20 and it's kind of based on vibes, how hard of a thing the game master wants it to be, and, you know, that's really it.
It doesn't always work.
No, but yeah, generally speaking, that is how we've done it. That's how we've had, I would say, the most success, is with, you know, super simplified systems and this understanding, this, like, you know, our drifts are synced. The game master is going to put spooky stuff on the table, and the players are going to appropriately respond to that in character, as opposed to, like, well, you know, what is the most effective way to just solve this problem, or do a thing that a character who was scared wouldn't do, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, buy into it, be a little bit scared yourself, so that it's more authentic when you play a scared character.
Yeah, I think as a game master trying to make this atmosphere, just, you know, fall back on the, like, known ways to do that, like, start small with, like, oh, you hear this noise or you see this, but you don't get a good glimpse of it.
Yeah.
And, like, cliffhangers, mystery.
Little sounds.
And, like, as it starts, you know, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Then you escalate. Now things are weird. Things aren't as they should be.
And then there's going to be some sort of reveal.
Yeah.
And, like, the anticipation of, like, your players knowing that, like, the reveal is coming will help create that. And then once the reveal happens, you're kind of in the end game and you've done your job, or, you know, you've done as much as you can, and then you can kind of forego the, like, little things. Not now, you don't have to describe every little noise because you know there's, like, a werewolf outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they know that now it's scary because, like, they've anticipated it for, like, an hour, and they finally get to it, and, like, yeah, it's a werewolf. It's tough. Mm-hmm. It's going to try to kill you.
Right. So, that is how, up until now, we've pretty much tried to do horror one-shots on the show and just, you know, when we hang out and sometimes rip a one-shot. But we've been thinking for a while, with a more mechanically robust game system, how do mechanics that reinforce the idea of horror, how do those work? And thinking about their efficacy versus just like the descriptive vibes type of way to create a horror session.
So the mechanics we're going to talk about, I'm coming down to here.
Okay.
They serve the like genre and atmosphere of horror by kind of mechanically limiting and restricting, in a sense, like what the player can do.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of in vibes type horror, it's like, here's why you should be scared. All this atmosphere, all this description. Mm-hmm. The mechanics are like, you are scared.
You are scared.
This is what you have available to work with. Yeah. Now.
You've lost access to certain, to things on your character sheet, or, things on your character sheet are appropriately modified to reflect the fact that you are scared of this. This is a scary thing. The numbers are telling your character that they are scared, and it doesn't matter how you play them, you're limited in this.
Yeah. And, there's meters to fill up, or, stats to look at and be like, okay, I don't want to, do this thing because that's going to make me stressed out. And I'm already super stressed out, right? Which is that limiting factor of like, okay, so I can't just go bomb rush the monster right now because that's just going to lead to more bad things. I got to hide, right? Whether or not the player actually feels that fear, their character does, and they have to act appropriately.
Yeah.
So we have a couple of real game examples. If you're listening in order of episodes, we just did Mothership.
This will sound super familiar.
All right, so we're going to talk about Mothership for a little more.
Mothership has this stress mechanic which builds to panic rolls and triggers. So every time you fail anything, you build up stress. And then there are prescribed moments where you have to make a panic check, and there are also just like, if you are really authentically playing your character, you can be like, I might panic.
I'm gonna do a panic check because I did not like that.
I don't know. And so you roll it. And then if you fail a panic check, you go into this trauma response. And it is unique to your class. Basically, it limits you and affects the other players in your party as well, in some way.
I think the trauma response is just a, I thought it was a static, like just stat modifier. Because if you fail a panic, you do one of these things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So there is a table that says like your panic effect, and then also on your character sheet is a...
Just how your class deals with...
Right. So, yeah, example...
With stress and stuff.
If you're a Marine... Whenever you panic, every close friendly player also has to make a fear save.
Yeah.
Which means they're probably going to gain a stress.
Mm-hmm. And like the android is all like fear saves have disadvantage or something like that.
Yeah. Because if the android on the team panics, then everyone's like, ooh. And then there is a d20 of panic effects that, they're all real mental health. Like therapist language. You could go catatonic. You could have a heart attack. You could be cowardly. And some of this stuff is going to come up in some of our other examples.
Yeah. So basically what Mothership has done is say, in addition to like all the regular stats a character has, like how good are they in stressful situations, there's also this stress meter, and in Mothership, you start at a minimum of 2, and there's a maximum of 20, because when you roll a panic check, you roll a d20, and go listen to the Mothership review for a better explanation.
Yeah, we'll explain that on that episode.
But what this basically says is the longer your character goes in a stressful situation, the more stressed they're going to be, which means they're going to start acting out. They're going to start having some negatives. They're going to start affecting their team bad. Whether or not the player is feeling any sort of anxiety or stress or, fear from what's happening in the game.
Yeah.
Your character does.
Numbers on your character sheets are going to reflect the idea that your character is frightened and having a bad time with it.
And that's going to limit how your character acts in the world. So, Mothership does that.
Yep.
Call of Cthulhu has a very similar one.
So, Call of Cthulhu's sanity, from what I understand, it's a it's similar to Mothership in its like use of the D100. So as you increase as sanity testing things happen to you, this number goes up, which makes it harder and harder to roll a successful save. When you fail, you have like temporary loss of control of your character, meaning that the game master gets to interject basically and be like, in this situation you react poorly, you react madly,
you cackle maniacally.
Yeah.
And that's all you can do.
As it gets more intense, you get to a point where you just like, it's a version of death, of losing your character in Call of Cthulhu. You can get to a point where
there's no coming back.
You're done. You are no longer a player character. That character is gone. It is an insane NPC that belongs solely to the game master because their mind has been shattered as they have accrued these, you know, points in madness.
So in a sense, I mean, both of these and they're all kind of resources that you manage. I believe we touched on this kind of stuff in our resource management episode. Much like survival games, like hunger and thirst are also character resources to be managed. So like, you know, these meters that fill up or these, you know, stats that tick up, the longer you do things, right, they inform decision making, right? Like, okay, I'm on that threshold of Call of Cthulhu sanity meter where it's like I'm over 50%, so like my next sanity check, there's a 50% chance I'm gonna, you know, temporarily go insane right now.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't do something that would be cool, like as a player it's like I want to touch the book.
Yeah.
But like, but if I touch the book and it, you know, adds 15 points to my sanity meter, then I'm going to go insane.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use my handkerchief to wrap the book up and I'm going to look at that later once like I've had a sleep or something like that. Right, which is exactly how characters in other horror media, games, books, movies.
Depending on how, you know, how well they're handling the situation, they may or may not make, you know, more or less rational decisions about a situation.
Mm-hmm. And there's always the, well, like, yeah, fuck it, I want to see what's in that book. Damn my sanity.
Yeah.
And that's fun, too.
That is, and it, yeah, that can be very exciting.
So, In a role-playing setting, like the player kind of gets a prompt, if you will, but like different from what we were talking about with the vibes. Like it's, you have to do you have to act this way, but go for it.
Right.
And so like Darkest Dungeon
or
is,
you can act, you can act as if you're not scared, but you are going to be statistically penalized for it.
Right. Which, like in Darkest Dungeon video game, you don't get that, you know, freedom of role-playing, but that's what
I included that, though, because it's a very cinematic way to describe a lot of these things.
Right, yeah. Right. What we're talking about, like the... So, in Darkest Dungeon, if you get max stress, you have a chance to become virtuous, a small percentage chance to become good. But you're probably going to become afflicted.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you can't attack the monster. Doesn't mean you can't heal your party. Just sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you say a mean thing and it makes somebody else stressed out.
Yeah.
So it's not like oh, well, I guess Call of Cthulhu, when you fail that, like the temporary control loss, like that's kind of something unique that's not what we're talking about in general. That's kind of a unique thing, I would say. Because it's also, like Mothership, it's not like you lose control of your character.
And in Mothership, they make a distinction between fear and sanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of bundled in the Call of Cthulhu thing, because you know the idea is that, like, yeah, it's stressful, but the thing that affects you and creates the atmosphere of horror is the madness, as opposed to, you know, a distinction between like stress, fear, and intellectual or mental sanity. Kind of two different things, but not always delineated as two different things.
Yeah.
We're talking about them both just in the broader context of horror.
Yeah. Whether you bundle them together or, you know, separate them out, it gives some sort of hard number that tells you how your character is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you're sitting comfy on a couch with snacks and probably a drink
and your friends
and it's either hot as fuck or like comfortable hot temperature wise. It could also be sexy too.
It could be sexy. We don't have a very like
sexy group,
interpersonally horny role playing group, but maybe you do. Maybe this is part of it. Maybe this is part of your foreplay. I don't know.
But anyway, so the mechanics give you a metric of how your character is doing, and it should influence how you play your character. And whereas vibes is more of all on feels and atmosphere, there's no like rule that says you can't go fight the monster, but like hopefully, you know, the atmosphere is set so your players don't necessarily want to, because that is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these mechanics will make it so it's not a optimal decision. Doesn't mean your players can't sub-optimize.
Right.
Because that's fun and exciting, like you said before. But it kind of just changes it a little bit more. It makes it, you know, math and a law and rule-based rather than vibes-based.
And you're de-incentivized to do certain things because a number is sitting there telling you, well, you are less likely to succeed. And so your best course of action, if you want success in a, like, a metagaming sense, is something unaffected by whatever your, you know, if you panic in Mothership, you know,
you might get...
Oh, boy. I mean, these are all... We didn't get to very many of these.
No, I mean, you guys did pretty well on your... Your meters. And rage. Didn't have very many crit fails.
Yeah. I don't know. I just... Maybe it's time to just move on to the what do we think?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, do we have anything examples, more to say about...
More examples or more things?
Do we need any more examples of mechanics? I think I've said all I wanted to say.
I think I pretty much have too. I think the thing I want to reiterate as we move on to this last section, where we are just going to... We don't have any bullet points or anything we're following. We're just talking about, like, what do we think about one versus the other, or a combination of both. You can't have game mechanics designed to reinforce the concept or the genre of horror without having a more mechanically robust game than, you know, some of the way we've done it, vibes based. We've also used, you know, barely there game systems.
I feel like it would be fairly easy just to tack on a stress mechanic to an RPG light, where it's like, you know, every time I tell you, mark a stress on your character,
mm-hmm.
and every time, like, I'm just, you know, spitballing here, every time your total roll equals less than that value, you panic and lose an action.
Yeah. Okay. Could, yeah, fairly simple.
I mean, of course, that brings up question. Like, if I was a player and the game master said that's how the system was going to work, I'd be like, okay, define for me when I get stress and how do I relieve it?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the game master's like, oh, well, you get stress when I tell you, and
you relieve stress when I tell you.
Relieve stress when I tell you.
Yeah. And then...
then that's on, like, the game master.
Well, then, yeah, why'd you include it then?
Well, I still think it's worth including. If you were, you know, trying to do a... if you're trying to emulate a horror game with mechanics, you mm-hmm. could use a simple thing like that. You would just have to be careful. And... well, you could do it. I could do it. I think I could do it.
Yeah, I think it's perfectly doable. All right, I guess... so, what excites you more? The... Just flat out one or the other binary. Having some game mechanics that, you know, alter a player's character sheet and reinforce the idea of whatever horror you're trying to create, versus no mechanics there. We're just trying to, like, share in this description. We're trying to share in this imaginary thing and get to the same vibes-wise place so that we're doing horror.
I'm going to be non-binary and say it depends on who my other players are.
Okay. That's fair.
I think there are some players, like Brian, who thrive in an atmosphere-based thing, and
he just gets scared so easily, and he loves to be scared with us.
I think the mechanics would bog that down.
Yep.
Like, if it was me and Brian playing a Halloween one-shot, definitely vibes-based. But I feel like, especially in a larger group, if there's more than two players, I think mechanics might be a little better, not necessarily more exciting
mm-hmm.
for me, but I think it would achieve greater results for a mechanics-based.
All right. Nothing about the idea of reinforcing horror with gameplay mechanics excites me. Except in the Darkest Dungeon situation. And the reason why that excites me is because, you know, you're loosely role-playing, but really what you're doing is controlling other characters. So when the stress and the fear and when those mechanics... when those mechanics trigger, like, afflictions and reinforce this idea of how scary the dungeon is, and, like, you might not be that scared, you're just playing a video game, but, like, the guy that you're controlling is fucking scared. I like that, but in the pen and paper forum, I really don't like the idea of mechanics limiting or prompting.
Well, what about a strict dungeon crawl? So basically just Darkest Dungeon on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you feel like that would be okay?
Yeah, I think so. Because the objectives that you're going for and the ways you interact with stuff are...
so easily distilled into...
yeah, distilled to mechanics.
Mechanics, yeah.
So then if you say, like, hey, you're fucking... you don't help. That's your, like Darkest Dungeon. You know, you stressed out and your your kind of traumatic response to that is to become, you know, abusive and unhelpful. You're like, okay, I'm going to do that. That is going to make it harder to continue through the dungeon, and it's going to make the other players, you know, have an appropriate reaction, probably.
But in, like, a whodunit murder mystery...
Or a clue, creature feature type of...
Clue style.
Yeah.
You know, who's the werewolf? We're all locked in this mansion together. You think mechanics would just get in the way?
I think mechanics really slow shit down. And a whodunit is good. A creature of the week. You know, like the gas station one that you did. A monster of the week episode. Or session, whatever. I'm going to stop, I think. This is an aside, listeners. I'm going to stop correcting myself when I mix up episode and session, because in this context, they mean the same thing. And sometimes they, you know, I'm talking about a session, but I'm also specifically talking about, like, episodic television format stuff. So I'm just going to stop.
Put it on the board.
Yeah.
Cosmo's going to stop.
I'm going to stop correcting or distinguishing when I... interchange those two words.
Cut to 30 episodes of the podcast later. What the fuck does he mean? Does he mean an episode of television or a session of role playing?
An episode of this podcast? Nobody knows. I think we actually kind of like happened upon well, so we put it on the board earlier in this episode. I think we happened upon something kind of genius, and it didn't really come from either of these two things, vibes or mechanical reinforcement of the conceit of horror, was the idea that, you know, horror is just harder to create. It becomes harder to, you know, to create that atmosphere the more fantastical of a place you start with. But you start with something, you know, grounded and familiar. Teenagers at a summer camp. You know, retail employees working a scummy shift, working a rough shift one night. I think that little nugget is maybe a more powerful piece of game master guidance than any examination of either vibes or mechanics. No, I do think it's, you know, it's going to lean you more towards into successfully creating the atmosphere and the vibes of horror. But I think regardless, and also I'm just thinking about the way we do one shots. I'm thinking about, you know, the Halloween Spooktacular later this year, or anything that we might come up with on an off week when we can't get the whole group together.
I don't know. I think the style. So that thing that we put on the board, right? The more mundane your starting point, the more weirdness stands out.
Yeah.
Absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, for the style of are you more vibes-based or more mechanics depends on the group, the number of players, who's being a player. It's... Vibes-based depends so much on player interaction.
Yeah, that reciprocation.
Mm-hmm. And jiving off each other, too,
mm-hmm.
or vibing off each other, whatever.
Ugh. Whichever.
Either or.
But yeah, with a vibes-based thing, like, you got to have players who are into that vibe and giving that vibe back out in the same way where, like, I really don't want to go look at the thing, but also I have to look at the thing because... that's just the rules of this horror movie, you know?
Yeah, and a mechanics-based system, I think, is better for larger groups and players who, not to put too fine a point on it, but, like, don't fully invest, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, they're...
who won't drift with everybody
looking on their phone or, you know, chatting or eating chips or whatever. Right, to keep it focused on the horror, you need that structure.
Mm.
Whereas if you have a small two-person player pool and you're locked in a tiny room like we are now, it's a lot easier to get away with vibe bases. And mechanics in any sort will slow it down, right? Because it's...
Right.
You want that fast...
You want that free flow of just
reactions,
pure roleplay.
And, you know, the yes-anding.
But I will say that... So you're saying, you know, situational. One better in one situation. But the situation in which a mechanically reinforced horror one-shot is better... is a worse version of, you know, a role-playing group meeting. Like, that's the one I don't want to play. I want to play the other one.
Well, yeah, sure. But,
so
you
if
know,
we're if we're talking about preference, then my preference is still really... Yes, yeah, you're right. But, yeah, if we're talking about what we prefer, I don't know. I didn't find our most recent and the most, like, in-depth thing that we've examined and played recently... being Mothership, I didn't find the stress mechanic very, like, it was almost like it wasn't there. And that had to do partially with us not rolling terribly, luckily, in some sense, or maybe unluckily if we wanted to get a better, better idea of what it could be. It just... looking through the Mothership books and reading the rules, it seems pretty clear what the intention is to reinforce this idea of a generic sci-fi horror setting where this is the thing that happens to everybody all the time. Not everybody all the time, but every player character is, you know, being sent on these doomed corporate things and finding out they're expendable after the fact, and space is full of scary stuff. Right. I didn't feel like it added anything, but I was, you know, making ticks on my character sheet. And
I mean, to be clear, both versions require buy-in.
Yes.
Right? It's not like
yes,
you can get away with minimal buy-in because you have the structure of the mechanics.
Right.
And I think in general it's just kind of a tough thing.
We could put that on the board. There is no robust enough mechanical simulation that will overcome a lack of
player buy-in.
Player participation or
put
reciprocation.
I think it's just
no matter how good of a, you know, mental health simulator you design, or
especially in our circles, things tend to be more like redistic. What?
I don't know what that means.
Things tend to be more silly and like slapstick and I don't know, goofy.
Mm.
Right? I think it takes a lot of mental fortitude and willpower to get a group of four people together and be like, let's all get on the same page. This is going to be
let's all pretend
scary.
This is real with the same degree of seriousness.
Yeah.
That's tricky. So, yeah, I would say, yeah, then that scale slides. As the amount of players involved or the amount of buy-in drops off, more mechanical reinforcement is better.
Do you ever,
as it slides the other way, you can do away with that, and you can do almost no, you could basically play with no system and just
tell a story
where you take turns doing parts of it. You had a question.
Do you ever, like, are you ever able as game master to just like kind of clock what the vibes are going to be based on player character names?
Yeah, and a couple times I've
like, it starts with the name and you're like, okay, what's your character's name? Ligma these.
Yeah,
okay,
all right,
I know what's going to happen
and
next.
And I'm looking at my notes and I'll be like, all right, we're not really doing this anymore.
Yeah.
The first time, and this was when you were in Australia.
Down under.
Yeah, when you were in the down under. I ran one shot to test the very alpha version of Dangerous Spaceman. And it just, yeah. I tried to set the scene by reading the intro to the setting, and a couple players were like, this is my character, and I was like, okay, so this is what we're doing.
So never mind.
And I pivoted in tone from the kind of like slightly self-serious but still like swashbuckling space adventure to just like, well, you know what this is just like a weird little dungeon on a planet instead of in a
greater universe.
Yeah, instead of in a, instead of in a fantasy dungeon, it's just a dungeon on Mars. And, I will get the testing that I want out of this because I'll still have you getting some fights and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Sometimes a player says their character's name.
I think we should put that on a board.
That might be on the board is,
Is if you're a game master, pay attention to what your characters name their characters, and that's going to tell you a lot about the headspace they're in right now and how the session's going to go.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing,
There's no right or wrong.
Right.
I think it's just good advice, because like if you come with a serious like, oh, it's going to be gritty, it's going to be dark, it's going to be scary, and then like characters named. Big Dick Six, let's go. It's like, all right, well, let's forget about the scary aspects.
Yeah, because we're not going to get scary with this going on. Can still play a game, can still have a good time.
And, players listening to this, maybe use that to your advantage and totally flip the table.
You
want to
trick me.
When you come with a really ridiculous name, but serious as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Don't do it the other way, though, because then I'll just be upset.
Don't come with a serious name.
With a serious name and pretend like you're taking it seriously and you're fully bought in and then just, like, be a walking dick joke. Then I'll be sad because that'll be the only thing I'm playing to. And I thought, we were going to get to...
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to imagine a little more intensely together. But that's fine. Okay.
That is what we think.
Yeah, I think that's what we think. I fucking hope so. All right. We talked about horror games or horror sessions. We talked about what we liked about it, the value of the, the well-known tropes in the genre, and we talked about how we like one-shots and reiterated all the ways that one-shots are good and what you can do with them. We described our kind of trial and error practice so far of achieving horror with vibes and narration and description, as long as the players are buying into it.
Loose mechanics, heavy description.
The success that we've had with that, but also the ways where that has not been successful. We came up with a couple good put it on the board nuggets out of that. This isn't a tips and tricks episode really, but we got a couple tips out of it. Then we talked about some examples of hard number based game mechanics that are designed to reinforce the genre of horror and how those interact with the shared fantasy and how they work. And then we kind of just digressed into what we think about these things in general. And I think where we landed is that, it is a sliding scale, like anything. We might have put that as a bullet point, but that would have been stupid, because of course everything is.
It always comes to that.
We talked about what that scale looks like and what the variables are on each side. And I think we're still excited about the idea of running horror one-shots. One thing we didn't talk about is not really here, but the Tombs acronym again from Mothership.
Tombs.
That's just so good. And just using the front cover of the Warden Handbook to generate any sort of horror movie themed one shot. I'm very excited about the potential for all the tables and Mothership.
I mean, we talked about it a little bit. We didn't name it.
Yeah.
We didn't call it by name. But I talked about it. You know, you start small.
Mm-hmm.
You start with these the transgression happens off screen, right? And then like these omens
start appearing.
Start small. Start
then you
small.
Start to connect.
And then you get the reveal, which is the manifestation.
And then the banishment and the slumber. Yeah. Anyway, horror and one shots in general. I think we could say safely, we recommend. We
do it, like it, lick it, love it.
If you like what you heard, head on over to 2hgm.com. There's some stuff there, various RPG this and that's that you can download for free, as well as a link to the drive-through RPG page for Afterlife, our original sci-fi fantasy post-apocalyptic role-playing game, our labor of love for the
Whoopee.
Last 7 years, whatever. Buy the print version, get a physical copy, and get a free digital PDF. Give that to as many people as you want. We don't care. And get in on our Patreon.
Yep. If you join the Patreon, you can join us on Discord when we do our Spookies, our Halloween specials, I mean.
Yep.
Heckle us, add, you know, flavor, you know, chat with the other patrons about how it's going, or, you know, also just like Q&As and kind of just, you know, regular Discord stuff.
Discord stuff. Hang out on Discord. Keep it, you know, add it to your other Discord stuff. Eventually turn off notifications. Just kidding. Don't do that.
Not for us.
Because, you know, if more people start showing up, we'll start talking about more cool stuff. And it'll be fun. All right. I think that's it. Anything to plug? Anything else before we get out of here?
No. Nah.
I'm playing Elden Ring again. Elden Ring's fucking great.
You plugging Elden Ring?
Yeah. I'm just plugging Elden Ring for free.
Miyazaki, money, please.
Money, please. He
doesn't give a shit about us.
I know. He's too busy thinking of other ways to annoy people with poison swamps. It's fine. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill is Finest as the intro and outro to our show. We'll see you all next time.
See you next time.